Good afternoon. Welcome back to PWR Network. Ann Arbor, Michigan is the broadcast home of PWR Network, the world in your hands. And today we are talking to Dr. John Kressler on Lillian's interviews, and he's written a book called Emeralds of the Alhambra, which focuses the story against the background of the Castilian Civil War. So, good afternoon, John. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing terrific, Lillian, and it's great to be here and a pleasure to talk to everybody.
Well, I'm very intrigued that you have written a book based in medieval Spain, because I think the only thing that Spain really is well known for is the Inquisition.
Yes.
And coming over to the New World and spreading cheer and slavery among the colonies.
Correct, yes.
So it's nice to see somebody else focus on a different time period in Spain.
Yeah. Well, let me give you a little bit of background on how I came to that. And I think it's a fascinating era, which is actually largely unknown to most people. And I would put myself in that category. So interestingly, I'm a professor at Georgia Tech, and I have written 5 nonfiction books, but my dream has always been to write fiction. And I love historical fiction, and so I set about finding a location for my first novel, and I stumbled upon 10th century Cordoba in southern Spain. And what I found was it was just an amazing period of tremendous cultural and flowering and civilization, with a very important twist, and that was that at that time, under the beneficent rule of the caliphs, Jews, Christians, and Muslims lived together effectively in peace. And so to me, as I thought about what's going on in our world around us today, with all of the religiously motivated conflict, an existence proof that it actually could be done, and not done for a short period of time, but done actually for several hundred years, was something that was really exciting to write about, and that's how I settled on the topic.
So what kind of research did it involve for you to find the necessary historical information that you needed in order to shape your story?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. And so I actually, before I ever put pen to paper, spent 9 months doing research, and that was a tremendous amount of reading. And what you have to appreciate, just to set a little bit of a historical context for the listeners, so as Islam spread in the 8th century, it reached the western edge of North Africa and then boiled across into southern Spain. And so that invasion happens in the year 711. And it doesn't end until 1492. So you have almost 800 years of Muslim history in Spain. And so learning about that that period of time, and this, again, this great flowering known as convivencia, this living together coexistence, happens in the 10th and 11th and 12th centuries, so about 300 years of period there. So doing a lot of exploration of reading about what life was like, what the history of it was, and so 9 months of that work as a preamble, feeling like I had a good command of things, and then, of course, as important often in fiction, traveling to Andalusia. So I spent 2.5 weeks on the ground traveling in the places that I was writing about, so Sevilla, Cordoba, Jaén, and then ultimately Granada, which is where Emeralds is actually set. So I spent a lot of time to get a sense of the location and the sights and sounds and smells that are necessary for writing great descriptive fiction.
Now, at that particular time in Spain's history, tell the audience what's going on there in terms of religion. Because at that time, ladies and gentlemen, Spain was not an empire. It wasn't unified, not the way it was by 1492, for example. They did not have a reigning king or queen, and that is important to notice.
Yeah, so the setting of the first book, and actually I would point out that this is the first of a series of books. So this first one is set during what is known as the Castilian Civil War. And so Spain actually, just as you say, Lillian, is a collection of different kingdoms, the largest of which is Castile, and modern Spanish is a close derivative of Castilian, where it came from. And so you have King Pedro of Castile, and then you have, and that's sort of central Spain, and then to the northeast corner of Spain, you have the Kingdom of Aragon with its own king. The Muslim Granada is the last remnant of Muslim Spain, and it's down in the very extreme southeastern tip of Spain. So you have, interestingly, a civil war between Christian Aragon and Christian Castile. And at that point, Granada had survived as a Muslim kingdom by being a vassal state to Castile. So actually, you have this very unique point in history where you have Muslim cavalry fighting with a Christian army against another Christian army for control of Spain, ultimately. And it even gets more interesting in that because you have at that time going on the Hundred Years' War between England and France. And so England gets in on the side of Castile, and France and the papacy get involved with Aragon. So you have really this sort of extension of the Hundred Years' War moving down into Iberia and that playing out there. So that's sort of the backdrop of where Emeralds is set. So that happens in 1367 to 1369 is when the story is set, and that's when this Castilian War is transpiring. Ultimately, King Pedro of Castile is going to lose, and then France makes its way on into Spain, and things go from there.
What was the reigning religion at that time before the Moors came in? Was it Christian?
Well, interestingly, so if you look at the history of Spain, it's just fascinating because it originally was a Roman colony. So the Romans actually occupied most of Spain, and most of the cities that we know today in Spain were originally Roman cities. And of course, as the Roman Empire collapses, the Visigoths, one of the warring tribes that were conquering the Roman Empire, end up settling there. And they are sort of become Christian, right? So it becomes a Christian society prior to this 8th century invasion by the Muslims, right? So it immediately pits, Christianity and Islam against one another. And, of course, the fierce Berber tribes from North Africa are able to fairly easily conquer Spain at that point. In fact, they make it as far as Tours in France, which is near Paris, right, before they're actually defeated. In 732, it's largely Christian. There are some remnants of Roman era paganism, but it's largely Christian.
All right. So, what was the prevailing worship going on? Was the church very, I want to say, dictatorial about how their faithful follow them, or were they a little lenient on how the people conducted themselves? They didn't mind having the Moors coming in and introducing another faith.
Well, so it's a fascinating history at this stage, and I'll speak particularly to the 10th century and this great flowering, the Golden Age. The Jews of today, in fact, would talk of the 10th century Spain as its golden age, as a matter of fact. So you have, after Spain is conquered by the Muslims, you have a very tolerant leadership that moves in and takes over, and that is the Umayyads that originally originated in Syria. So you have this very tolerant branch of Islam that begins to take over Spain. And under that, they are absolutely tolerant of alternative religions. So the Christians are able to live and worship within the Muslim kingdom, and Jews are able to live and worship within the Muslim kingdom. So it's really this very unique point of history. And again, this stretches for several hundred years. So, but if you look, for instance, at the Christian church at that point, so now we're talking 10th century, it's a multilingual culture, a very embracive culture and tolerant culture where you have virtually all of the citizens speaking Hebrew and Arabic, and early Spanish, let's say, which was called Latinia, and you would have the Christian churches worshiping in the vernacular, in any of those languages, using Arabic Bibles. So it was definitely separated from the mainstream Christian church that we associate with Europe in the Middle Ages. It was sort of doing its own thing, and again, set within the context of this Muslim civilization, which was not just tolerating different religions, but actually embracing the other religions, allowing them to build churches and synagogues, allowing them to have interesting social mobility up into high ranks of Muslim society. So it was really a pretty special point in history. And so even though I'm starting Emeralds as that's kind of falling apart in the 14th century, again, this is a series of books. So in the second book, I'm going to go back to that golden age in the 10th century Cordoba and write about that as well. And it's just a remarkable point of history. And again, I would argue it's awfully relevant for people today. If you look around the world and the amount of religious conflict that's going on, and those are, of course, very complicated issues, but it's an existence proof that coexistence of religious traditions that differ is possible, in fact. And to me, that's a really important point if we want to move forward toward a peaceful world.
I agree with you on that respect. And right now, we are going to take a moment for one of our sponsors.
Okay.
Hi, Sol here, author of Pay Me What I'm Worth. Did you catch our last Confidence series right here on PWR Network? If you missed it, you need to click to bit.ly/confidence2013. So bit.ly/confidence2013. You get to listen to a cast of 8 people, lively characters, on their 12-week journey as they improve their confidence. And heads up, starting Monday, September 9th, we'll begin another confidence series. Get yourself in front of PWR Network's 6 million plus listeners. Be on our show live for 12 weeks in a row. Click to bit.ly/confidence2013. Again, bit.ly/confidence2013.
We are here in the studio today with Dr. John Kressler, who wrote the book Emeralds of the Alhambra, and which he deals with 3 different religions that are battling it out today: Christianity, Judaism, and Muslim. When the Moors came into Spain, they introduced a whole new set of rules in terms of the arts and music, and pretty much brought the old Roman city up to a higher standard of living plus intellect.
That's absolutely right. So I think it's a remarkable fact. If you look at Cordoba, which was the capital basically of 10th century Muslim Spain, you really could not over exaggerate the amount of accomplishment that happens there. So you have this profound flowering of culture and knowledge that is welling up, and that spans all the way from science to architecture to medicine to poetry and music and literature. And one of the things that's very key there is that the caliphs of Cordoba in Muslim Spain were very intent upon discovering and resurrecting and translating the lost knowledge of the ancient Greeks. And that ranges, again, from science to philosophy to literature. So all of that sort of flows in from the Mediterranean basin into Cordoba, begins to be translated into Arabic. And ultimately, it's a little appreciated fact, but it's true, ultimately, much of that knowledge and culture is going to set the stage for the European Renaissance that most of us associate with, say, the 14th century. So it's really an interesting flowering. So, yeah, the amount of civilization brought in by the Muslim, the tolerant Muslim leaders, and this celebration of intellect and art and literature and everything that goes with that is pretty astounding, actually, and very unexpected, I think, in many ways that people think about that period.
I think people need to think about that period, because when I have done serious study into the medieval ages, what they call the Dark Ages, it wasn't so dark. They had a lot of inventions, and they had a lot of scientific discoveries in medicine.
It's fascinating, it was a learning experience for me as well, because I think most people, particularly in the United States, have a very poor understanding of medieval Europe. You think of the plague, you think of, you know, scribes sort of holed up in monasteries trying desperately to preserve a book or two, and all of this sort of lack of culture that's going on. But again, you look at 10th century Cordoba, it is the most civilized city on the planet. Just to give you an example of that, in 975 of the Common Era, the caliph, who was a great collector of books, has the largest library on the planet, and it contains 400,000 volumes. I mean, that's huge for a library today in 2013, but think about that. In 975, a library with 400,000 volumes, just by comparison, if you go into continental Europe at that time, the largest library in Europe was at the University of Paris, and it contained 400 volumes, right? So there's huge disparity between that. If you look at the medicines that you mentioned, Lillian, it's very interesting. During that period is this rediscovery and reinterpretation of all that the Greeks knew about medicine. And the encyclopedias of medicine, which will define medical practice for the next 500 years, come out of 10th century Cordoba, right? And they're written by Muslims.
I just wanted to add that they were coming up with machinery that worked on the principle of the pulley, of the principle of steam, on the principle of water. These were not stupid people. I mean, when you speak about medieval times, well, they say, well, look what they were doing in China. But you don't have to look at China, because so much of this was already, that somebody did a robot almost in having a doll come to life just on basic principles.
Well, just think about this for a second. In Cordoba in the 10th century, which is a city now, it's the largest city in Europe by far, has 300,000 people in it in 975, has running water, indoor toilets, lit streets, public hospitals, public baths, all of this civic infrastructure, which is unheard of anywhere else in continental Europe at the time.
In India, they had already learned how to irrigate with pipes palaces that carried the water in, where the bathed, where the people had their version of a water toilet, and it really makes you wonder why they couldn't keep a grip on their power to enslave, and it's just not. The Christians were talking about the. Mm-hmm. I think one of the reasons why we're having so much trouble today is that there are two different or three different levels of faith within the Muslim religion.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things they point out in my research this afternoon was the fact that there were the kind that first came into Spain, and they were very flexible, and they allowed other civilizations to flower within the civilization they brought, and then you had the ones who adhere more strictly to the law.
Yes. Yeah,
and
you're absolutely right. So you have this, and it turns out that is the center point of the unraveling of the beauty of Muslim Spain in the medieval period. So you have this very tolerant, very enlightened Syrian Arab caliphate, which everything we've been talking about and described, and then you have the far more conservative and fundamentalist elements of Islam emanating from North Africa. And what's going to happen actually is that, and I tell part of this story in book two that I'm about to finish, is that they end up that the African tribes make their way into all of this mix, right? And once that happens, the antagonism between Muslims and Christians is exacerbated, right? And that's where this this notion of reconquista, this reconquest of Muslim Spain by the Christians becomes acute, because you have now the tolerant Arab rule being replaced by a much more much less tolerant, much more combative Islam of jihad, right? And you see the remnants of that even today in our world, of course. And
yes.
It certainly was true then, and I think it's, again, more the reason to be reading stories about Muslim Spain in the medieval period, because many of the themes that are played out today actually began there, right?
Well, I think it set the style, and I think, more importantly, it set the tone between relations between men and women who were being brought up in different faiths, and at least expose them to what the other religion was, and to give them a basic understanding of what it entailed. Unfortunately,
yep.
when you start mixing in politics and world
yeah.
domain, and when Spain finally got itself organized to have a king and queen, then things started popping.
Yeah, and then it got a little ugly. That's true. Now, one thing I would point out, Lillian, in this book is that I'm fascinated by medieval Spain, and I'm writing a series of books to probe that 800-year history and remind the modern reader of things that they should know about and be aware of as we interpret the world today and try to move forward. But I'm trying to break open that history using compelling love stories. And those love stories actually are crossing religious boundaries. So in Emeralds, you know, my first book, it's really as the story set in this Castilian War in the 14th century. The story is about a Muslim princess, a young lady by the name of Layla, who is a Muslim princess who is studying Muslim Sufism, right, mysticism, who then becomes, falls in love with a Christian knight who is brought back into the Alhambra Palace. So it's, again, exploring the dynamics of love as it crosses religious boundaries within this, amalgam of, political intrigue that's going on around them, right? So that kind of makes these very interesting and compelling reads. It's not just a history primer about this period that we should know about, but let's break open that history in a very interesting way, looking at the way love operates across cultural and religious boundaries.
Well, I think it's important that people, especially in the States, understand European history better than they do. Certainly when you're in school, you get the traditional European history, and everybody has to memorize the kings with the dates, and you hear about Robin Hood, and you hear about the Crusades, and you hear about all these really relish points that the teachers feel that it will hold your attention long enough to learn some of it. But there's so much more that makes history, and the fact that is if you don't understand or don't have an awareness or cognizance of what that history was, it's pretty much going to be played out in modern terms.
Mm-hmm.
With
mm-hmm.
the same type of behavior. The behavior has not evolved. The environment.
I completely agree. While my training, interestingly enough, is in physics, and I'm an engineering professor, my second love is history. And I am an absolute firm believer that, we as a human community need to know our history, or else, to follow the cliche, we're doomed to repeat the tragedies of history, right? And I think we're kind of in the middle of this now. If you ask 100 people on the streets of America, was there a time when Jews, Muslims, and Christians ever got along peaceably? They'd say no, right? They'd look at you like you're crazy. And yet, it happened, and it didn't happen for a few years. It happened for several centuries, right? And that's, I think, just a key fact for moving forward and looking at how people did it then, with the notion that if it was done once, fundamentally it can be probably done again.
Yes, and I agree with you. Before we run out of time, John, please tell everybody where they can find you on the web. Tell everybody where they can find your book, buy your book, and also let everybody know where some of your other books. I've noticed you wrote one about understanding mm-hmm. your teen, which is also very interesting.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. So I'm easy to find on the web, and it's John, D as in David, Kressler, CRESSLER.com. If you go there, you will actually see all of my books. And as Lillian mentioned there, I've written five nonfiction books. One of those is called Reinventing Teenagers, so it's for a general audience and a way to reach young people in issues of character. That's fun. And the other general audience book is something called Silicon Earth, which breaks open the nanotechnology revolution for people with no technical background. So those are both fun books. If you go to the website on Emeralds, you will see it there. And again, it's the first of a series of books, and you'll find a wealth of information. So there's a book trailer, there's all sorts of photographs taken from the settings of the book, and you know, excerpts and a variety of things. The book is available from Sunbury Press. It's on Amazon, obviously, and it is both ebook and print versions of that are available. And I think you'll find it a terrific read. It's got a lot of back matter, spelling out this history, looking at the various historical nuances, and first and foremost, again, it's a compelling love story which breaks open a rich history that everybody should know something about.
I think so. John, thank you very much for showing up and doing an interview with me this afternoon. I thoroughly enjoyed it, and we'll like to have you come back to discuss some more, because I really feel that the medieval period certainly is very much misunderstood, and that there is a lot
agree.
More.
And I have to say, Lillian, it's been a real pleasure being with you guys, and I would love to have the opportunity to come back and talk some more. That'd be great.
Great. Ladies and gentlemen, you can hear this interview all over again at twitter.com/PWR Talk Network, facebook.com/PWR Talk, http://PWR Talk, ondemand.com, and PWRTalk.com. And before you go away and stray, the word for this afternoon is man. And Henry George said, man is an animal, but he's an animal plus something else. He is a mythic earth tree whose roots are in the ground, but whose topmost branches may blossom in the heavens. Thank you all very much for listening. And remember, tonight our next scheduled program begins at 8:30 this evening with Flash Silvermoon and What the Animals Tell Me, followed at 10 by Dr. James Reedfield, Myth and Legend, History and Religion, and he'll be talking about the papacy and the church, father and son popes. So I hope you can join us then. Thank you all very much for listening, and remember, please keep listening. Thank you. Still there, John?
Hi, Sol here. I'm the author of Pay Me What I'm Worth, and I'm hiring. Yes, I'm hiring. The details about two positions that I'm hiring for is located at bit.ly/payhelp. That's bit.ly/payhelp. No spaces. You're going to find out about how I will pay you to learn how to be paid what you're worth. Yes, it sounds bizarre, but I will actually pay you to learn how to be paid what you're worth. And I'm hiring so that I can pay you. Visit bit.ly/payhelp for more details.